interesting.
Well, hello, everyone. I'm joined once again by Black Horse. Today, we're going to be talking about immigration in Canada and how Mark Carney has gone from being the neoliberal manager of the Bank of England, essentially, to being the deporter in chief. I don't know how true that is, but we'll see. Before we get going here, I'll just remind people, all of January, I have 25% off all courses, promo code SHORJAN. Buy it now, etc. Where can people find you, Black Horse?
The Red Ensign at Substack, at the Black Horse 65 on Twitter, and the Red Ensign on YouTube.
Now, Mark Carney, how is this guy who we all thought was, you know, as liberal as Justin Trudeau and all the rest of them, and woke and all the rest of it, how is he doing negative migration and deportations, Black Horse? What's going on?
Okay, so first I think we're going to review what has actually happened, and then we'll make some comments as to why it's happened. But to point out to the listeners who may not follow Canadian politics as closely, Mark Carney came in on the Liberal Party of Canada ticket. So he replaced Justin Trudeau as leader of the Liberal Party of Canada. All the existing infrastructure, both behind the scenes, the Laurentian elite who support the Liberal Party, and the actual people who executed the Trudeau era migration policy to Canada, are members of this government. So Mark Wiseman, who founded the Century Initiative is a think tank that wants to raise the population of Canada to 100 million. That's more than double it over the next 70 years, almost exclusively by migration, is the currently the, he was just appointed as the ambassador to the United States. The immigration ministers that prevailed under the Trudeau government are still members of the government and members of cabinet. So it's the same elite executing an entirely opposite policy. And so we'll talk about the policy first, what has actually happened, and then we'll talk about the reasons why I think this is happening. So if you pull up the first image here.
Yeah, I was just going to say, though, it's worth mentioning, you know, for a parallel for British viewers, Robert Jendrick, who's just joined the Reform Party, right, was the immigration minister under Boris, right? The guy responsible for Boris Wave is now cutting promos saying that he is going to be the deporter in chief. So there are kind of parallels going on across the across Western countries, or across what do you call it? The
The Anglosphere is what I call it.
Yeah, the Anglosphere is probably a better way of putting it. But there are interesting parallels because, of course, Keir Starmer, for all his ills, did reduce net migration by 70%. Now, I know there's all sorts of ifs and buts and caveats and that, but the fact is that number did come down as a deliberate policy. But anyway, let's pull this up. Here we go.
Yeah, so for those not familiar with the Canadian context, I wanted to just introduce the policy of the Trudeau government. So Canada has a population over this period between 35 and 40 million. Liberal policy in 2022 and 2023 was to bring more than a million people a year to the country. That's like in a two-year period, that's a migrant wave that is 5% of the like 3% of the population. And uniquely in Canadian history, they brought most of these people to Canada as non-permanent residents in categories like student visas and as temporary foreign workers. And that's going to be very important when we talk about the change in policy.
Sorry to interrupt again, Black Horse, but it's striking to British eyes how similar this is to Boris Wave. It's the exact same policy, down to small details like a large bulk of them were students.
Yeah, I mean, in Canada, the majority of them were temporary foreign workers rather than students. But, you know, we got to a situation where, like, at many Canadian universities, 80 and 90% of the students were foreign students because the university program was seen as an export industry because it's new dollars coming to the country in a period after COVID where the government finances were in a recession and where wages were rapidly escalating. So the response to rapidly escalating wages was to hammer it with migration. So if we flip to the next page.
All right, I'll just have to get it up here. So this is the new policy.
Yep. So the new policy of the Carney government was to have continue to have net migration, like to continue to have some permanent immigration, but to have a huge number of these non-permanent residents leave every year so that the population growth of the country would be almost exactly zero. The predicate of this policy is to avoid creating an economic crisis in the country, particularly in the real estate market, by collapsing, by trying to exactly split the difference between reversing migration policy, but also not creating an oversupply in the housing market. If we flip to the next page.
Yep.
Similarly, there's an effort here to reverse direction on student visas, but to do so without, the university system is a big client and employer of the Laurentian elite. So the attempt here is to reverse course without inciting a crisis in the university system. We've seen some bankruptcies already in the university system as a result of this, massive staff cutbacks. So far, the reversal of course here has not created a crisis yet in the university system. So far, they're kind of sticking that landing. And then if we look at the actual early numbers here on net migration, that's the next page here.
Yeah, so this is net migration.
Yes. So the first data we have back on this policy indicates that in 2025, they pretty closely modified migration policy to get their implicit goal of zero migration. They ended up with small net migration because they underestimated the number of people who would leave Canada during this period. But they pretty close to executed the policy as intended.
To make this clear, this is an above 100% reduction in net migration in 1 year or 2 years.
One and a half years.
Just incredible. Okay.
If we flip to the next page. So because of the way the migrant wave was structured dominated by what are called various categories of temporary workers. Over the next 2 years, there's an estimated 3 million additional visas which will expire, most of which have no pathway to permanent residency. The British equivalent is indefinite leave to remain. So theoretically, all 3 million of these people under current law will have to return to their country of origin or go somewhere else. I want to flip to the next page here and talk about how that's going with those who have already expired. So we saw in the net migration page that a significant number of these people have gone home. However, we have also created a problem which has not historically existed in Canada. So historically in Canada, there have been a very, very small number of illegal migrants in the country, but we now have a population Stats Can estimates between 20 and 600,000 illegal migrants who have mostly gotten into that position by overstaying their visas. So some fraction of the millions of... So far, there's been something like 1.5 million TFWs or student visas that have expired. Something like a third of those people have remained in the country despite not having legal status. And if you remember back to the graphic on foreign students, part of the reason this has been possible, whereas historically it's been very, very difficult to live in Canada as an illegal migrant, is that the migration, which came to Canada in 2022 and 2023, was very homogenous from specific areas, particularly in India. And so unlike in previous generations where it has been basically impossible to work illegally in Canada, these communities have gotten sufficiently established and sufficiently large to be able to defend some fraction of their population working without valid work permits. If we flip to the next page here.
So this is...
deportations.
Yep.
So the Government of Canada, in response to this, has more than doubled its annual targets for deportations. Note here that Q4 in 2025, we only have the first month of numbers. So we're going to end up somewhere in the 23,000-24,000 deportations for 2025. Now, if that number of illegal migrants is where I think it is, near a between a half a million and 700,000, deporting 25,000 people is not exactly, it's not going to force this population to go home in the short term, but it is enough. It is an escalation. It's consistent policy. It is enough to encourage a lot of them to go home voluntarily, or a lot of them to become illegal in the United States instead of illegal in Canada. It tends to be much easier to work illegally in the United States. It's also a lot easier to live illegally in the United States. Other than a couple of urban centers, it is very, very difficult to live illegally in Canada. And so the Government of Canada has taken up a kind of hostile environment policy coupled with an escalation in deportation enforcement to try to encourage as many of these people as possible to voluntarily leave the country. And the last thing that I want to point to here is the political organization of some of these groups. So you can see the last graphic here is from one of a chain of protests from particularly the Indian Sikh community, but there have been a number of communities that have engaged in this, which are protests of various kinds. This is a Marxist coded version of it that calls expiring visas as a call for revolution, and kind of seeking class consciousness for this group of TFWs who kind of view themselves as, I think view themselves correctly as a kind of serf class in the country. So that gives you a picture of what has happened in Canada over the last 3 years with respect to migration. Now I think it's time to kind of talk about why.
Well, I mean, I'm also interested. I mean, it seems to me that Carney has done what I wanted Starmer to do, which is the almost kind of like murderous Blairite efficiency engine. The magical machine is going to work for him. For whatever reason, Starmer has been way less strong than this, and as and his results are not as good in my view. Like, he hasn't, you know, he did bring it net migration down by 70%, but he hasn't stopped the small boats. He's, you know, behind on deportations. He keeps on U-turning all the time. He kowtows to his left wing. So I'm also interested in, like, how the hell has Carney managed to do this in, you know, like, in my mind, Canada is the most wet, most liberal country out of all of the Anglo sphere, even more liberal than Britain is, and yet he seems to have had more joy. So I'm interested as to the mechanisms.
Yeah, in Canada, the establishment has largely prevented migration from coming into the official political discourse. So if you scan Canadian news over the last 2 years, it is not a major item in Canadian news that any of this has happened. So remember that the entire media in Canada is heavily subsidized by the state. During COVID, Justin Trudeau essentially went from a situation where we had our equivalent of the BBC plus a collection of private media. He introduced subsidies that pay up to 50% of the salary of every journalist in the country. Wow. So it was a pretty hard state takeover of media, which has given the government tremendous influence to manage the information space in the country, combined with pretty extensive regulations on social media. So which drove Facebook out of the news business in Canada, and has restricted platforms other than X from algorithmically serving you content from what you call the slop right.
Mm-hmm.
And so as a consequence, the Canadian establishment have been able to very effectively marginalize all discussion of migration, except discussion which is local and officially political.
But ironically, they're doing exactly what the slop right would want any government to do.
Well, that's correct, but they can do it without appearing as if they're operating from the slop right, right? Because they've marginalized all these voices. They don't have to look like they're kowtowing to Ezra Levant or whoever the equivalent is in the United Kingdom. They also have the economic crisis with respect to the U.S., as cover for a level of executive authority. Like, you have to think about the Carney government as essentially a national unity government of the kind that existed in the United Kingdom from the First World War through to the 50s, where even though he is officially a representative of the Liberal Party of Canada, Carney, prior to the escalations with the United States, would have been perceived in Canada as from the extreme right of that party and kind of ideologically conservative.
Like a Tony Blair or somebody like that.
Yeah, he would be perceived like that as well.
Mm-hmm.
But the other two elements here are kind of worth looking at. There are two real motivations for the Laurentian elite pursuing this strategy. The first is that the migrant groups that they brought to the country were very homogenous, and as a result formed rival political blocs within the country. The perception from the Laurentian elite was, as soon as you had like a Sikh nationalist as the leader of a major nationalist party, the Socialist Party, the NDP, that represented a threat to their political control of the country. So it was time to smash a rival castle. And then the other element of this is, given the state of the Canadian government finances and given in Canada more than any other place in the world, migrant policy has been subsidized by the state. And so there has been an extremely powerful neoliberal argument made, particularly by the network that the Canadian banks are part of. A lot of the data that I presented to you there is actually not prepared by the government of Canada. It's prepared by the Canadian banks. And they have made the argument, particularly National Bank of Canada, that Canada can no longer afford migration as a policy, and particularly the resettlement subsidies that have gone with it. And so the economic difficulty that the country is experiencing as a result of tariffs from the United States have been used as justification to radically cut down these programs.
So, I mean, would it be fair to say that Justin Trudeau made a lot of genuine errors when he was in power?
Yes, Justin Trudeau, in addition to being kind of evil, also made like political theory errors, particularly in creating political rivals within the country. And those errors, the Carney government is attempting to correct and reconsolidate in order to reconsolidate power.
Very, very interesting indeed. And so do you say, I mean, is Carney popular in the country? You know, is he, because one of the other remarkable things about Keir Starmer is that even when he does good stuff, he doesn't manage to get any plaudits for it, or like he doesn't build up any political capital. Everybody hates him, left, right, center. He's just absolutely hated. Is Carney doing better? Is he, like, are the public behind him?
Mark Carney has really successfully executed a rally around the flag strategy. He is as popular as Canadian prime ministers really ever are. So one of the things that people outside Canada often don't appreciate is that in my lifetime, I don't think any Canadian prime minister has ever gotten more than about 41% of the vote. Because of the regional dynamics, they're able to hold essentially absolute power with kind of mid-30s level popularity. So Carney has the same set of political enemies that Liberal prime ministers always have. He has the ideological enemies in kind of rural Ontario. He has the power block in Western Canada who hate him because he's not because he's a representative of the Laurentian elite. And he has enemies in Quebec because he has had to cut back the amount of patronage that he passes to the province. But among other classes, besides the kind of rival political class that he has, he's especially kind of older whites, he's incredibly popular. And that increase in popularity has more than made up for his losses in the migrant communities.
Interesting. How much is Trump to do with his popularity?
Trump is the most important factor in his popularity. If Donald Trump didn't exist, all of what we've just discussed would not have been politically possible.
And I mean, dare I ask you, Black Horse, has any of this made you like him more?
My view is that the most important issue for Canada is the navigation of the kind of late imperial period in the United States. I would say that the jury is out on Carney's strategy in this regard. So all of what you see here if he fails to maintain the integrity of the Canadian state because he has pursued a policy which is too anti-American, all of those gains may be destroyed very, very quickly. I would say that I am a Carney skeptic. I also think that he, I don't think that this is a sustainable policy within his own party. Eventually he will age out of the position or he will lose political ascendancy, and he has not successfully convinced the left in the country that this is the correct course.
Right. I mean, it's kind of interesting because my perception of Carney when he became Prime Minister of Canada is that he was seen as a safe pair of hands for the globalists, right? I mean, he was literally persuaded to run by Blair himself after being the governor of the Bank of England. I likened it to Palpatine appointing Grand Moff Tarkin or something like this. Like, this is, you know, their man. This is like the globalists' man, the Davos man.
But I think this is
strategy is high risk, right? It's a high risk strategy.
It's a very high risk strategy. I think this is the strategy that Blair would prefer politicians like Starmer to be pursuing in their own nations. And I think the fact that it is not the strategy which is being pursued in Europe is a consequence of politics in Canada has become very serious over the last couple of years. The economy is getting worse very rapidly. There are separatist movements in the country that are very serious. The country has been threatened directly with annexation. We're under this summer we're expecting that the Canada-US-Mexico trade agreement will expire and not be renewed, certainly not renewed in its current form, which will be a crippling blow to the economy. There's a very short runway in which to execute the Carney maneuver. And so I think that level of seriousness with which politics is being approached by our elite is what's driving the much more clear-cut results that you see here versus what you see in some other states that have attempted this kind of maneuver.
Final question. I mean, you started saying that a lot of these people a couple of years ago were saying that they want the population of Canada to get up to 100 million. Is this like a temporary, reprieve from mass immigration? And then some time down the line, they're going to turn the taps on again? Or do you think they fundamentally change their thinking?
I think that they have realized that they've realized two things. First of all, they've realized that mass migration is not a successful strategy for addressing the economic problems of the country, and that mass migration, as put forward by the Century Initiative, the Century Initiative's justification for that approach is to make Canada a sufficient rival to the United States to no longer be. Trudeau the Elder described the relationship between Canada and the United States as being in bed with an elephant, right? They can crush you without even noticing. And the justification within the circles that support the Century Initiative is to alter that dynamic irrevocably. The Laurentian elite, I think, have seen that if they do that, especially if they do that with migration, which is too monocultural in character, they will unseat their own position. And so I think that they have permanently abandoned elements of that strategy. Equally, they have noted that migration from that the migration wave, which has occurred since 1980, has had the reverse economic impact that the migration wave that occurred in the country in the 19th century had. The migration wave in the 19th century and even the post-war wave created substantial economic growth in the country, whereas the post-1980 wave, despite being highly quote-unquote meritocratic, has had the reverse effect, causing the Canadian economy to lag behind. Famously, National Bank of Canada described the last 10 years as a lost decade in Canadian economic terms. So the strategy of using migration, especially at the level that it was used in the period, particularly the late Trudeau period, I think is permanently discredited within Canada's elite circles. That's not to say that they, have become ethno-nationalists or something.
Mark Carney, the race realist.
Yeah, but they have. There has certainly been a shift in perception within Canada's existing elite, especially with respect to the relative power of certain groups. Like the Laurentian elite is essentially descended from a group that was called the Family Compact, which is a group of. British aristocrats that once ran the country, and they have a real consciousness about them, and have jealously guarded their positions of institutional power in the country. And I think they have come to the view that migration threatens that system.
Fascinating, absolutely fascinating. Well, I mean, it does look like Canada's ahead of every other country when it comes to this, and it's done it without any slop right at all. It's not incredible. But anyway, Black Horse, where can people find you?
The Red Ensign on Substack, The Red Ensign on YouTube, at the Black Horse 65 on Twitter. Check out the content.
And I'll just remind people, promo code Shawjang gets you 25% off all courses up until the end of January. And most importantly of all, everybody, get out. If you like this video, be sure to like and subscribe. You can join the channel for thousands of hours of past shows in the archive and hundreds of videos. If you have any questions, you can leave a super chat or a super thanks, and I'll be sure to pick it up during my weekly office hours, which run every Tuesday afternoon. I also provide courses at the academic agency, which I encourage people to buy. Thousands of students now have taken the Trivium to improve their skills in writing, logic, and rhetoric. Just three of many courses available. Buy it now. But most importantly of all, friends, get out.